Hey everybody, welcome to the latest edition of Worst Seats in the House with Michael Russo and Anthony LaPanta. Producer Brandon chiming in because I lost the first few minutes of this episode. I don't know what happened. It's just gone. You missed out on Anthony LaPanta and Nate Prosser exchanging some pleasantries live from Tuttle's, by the way. Everything's good with their lives. They had great Father's Days. And that's my summary of that. Also, in the middle of the episode, there's going to be a weird little audio blip. It went to the backup, and, well, that's what happened. Anyways, enjoy this latest episode of Worst Seats in the House. Hosting today is Anthony LaPanta with Nate Prosser, live from Tuttle's.
You really just wanted to be able to do was be a dad, spend some time with your family, and these are the kind of days where, and the kind of weekends where that's so important.
Yeah, for sure. It was, you know, as an athlete, being in pro sports, selfishly, it's all about you. You know, you got to eat right. You got to sleep right. You got to train right. You got to focus right. You kind of got to eat, sleep, breathe your career. And your, for me, it was hockey. And, you know, having kids and a wife, they kind of revolved around my schedule, revolved around, okay, my wife's making hot dogs and macaroni and cheese for dinner. And we play the Blackhawks tomorrow. I got to, you know, we got to find something else for me. I got to have a steak and potatoes and, you know, a salad or something, you know. So, but no, now getting on the other side of it, I love that it's not about me anymore. And it's about my kids and it's about my wife. And it's about, you know, taking everything off her plate because for 11 years it was, you know, all about me. And so that's been the fun part over the last year is just, you know, taking my kids to school and picking them up and, you know, coaching their sports and, you know, taking them to their events and activities and all that kind of stuff. So that's been the joy of the last year so far, just, you know, being a dad again. What'd you get up to on Father's Day?
Yeah, we had, I had to work the Twins game. So It was a little, everything was a little disjointed all weekend because I had the Twin series in Arizona. And when you're working in the studio, the games in Arizona start in the middle of the night. We had 9 o'clock games on Friday and Saturday night, which means by the time you're off the air with the post game show and then put together some ideas for tomorrow's show and get home, it's pretty late nights. And we actually had a great weekend because my son AJ, who just walked in here and is flying back to Denver tonight, but he was in town for the weekend. Nice. We had a charity golf event Friday out at Loggers Trail in Stillwater because
right next there.
Yeah, and my good friend Chad Graff, who I don't know if you know, he works for the Athletic, covers the Minnesota Vikings for the Athletic.
He used to be with the Wild.
Used to be covering the Wild.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yep.
And so he and his wife tragically lost a daughter. Like she lived less than 2 weeks
due to
some remarkably rare chromosome disorder that was
horrible.
I mean like one in a million stuff, and Children's Hospital was a big part of it. So he put together, this was the first one, a fundraiser golf tournament, a charity event out at Loggers Trail on Friday. And so my son AJ flew in for that tournament. It was fun for me because we had our whole family together. One of my daughters was driving the beverage cart. Another one was making Bloody Marys for everybody at the first tee. And my wife was
perfect,
taking pictures. And then my two boys were in a foursome in the event. And I was too. So we had everybody in town for the whole weekend.
All at Loggers
that Friday. But I had to work Twins Friday night and Saturday night. And then yesterday afternoon, Father's Day. But after the game yesterday, we were able to get together, have some dinner, and it was, you know, those times are special for us.
For sure. Getting all the fam together, that's everything.
Well, and they're rare now. The kids are all a little bit older. They're scattered and
starting their own lives, their own careers.
So the odds of all the schedules lining up and getting everybody together, and it was always a big part of our life in my family growing up, but even as we grew into having young kids with my parents there and just sitting around the table for Sunday dinner and listening to everybody tell stories about what they're doing that week. And, you know, now they're all grown-ups. They've got their opinions on everything, and it's interesting and fun to see it for the next generation.
Yeah, I mean, this life is pretty dang short. It's all about family, and it's all about, you know, being near, and when they're in town is, you know, being around and, you know, sharing those stories and sharing those hugs and laughs. And I definitely see, you know, in my life why we want to be centered here in Minnesota with all the families and grandparents and cousins around and brothers and sisters. It's you can't replace that, really.
No question. Does your dad let you go play golf with him?
Every now and then. He hasn't invited me yet this summer. I'm looking forward to a Spring Hill day here sometime soon.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Yeah. He's I think he just turned 60, and he still bombs the ball. He's still probably like a 4 or 5 handicap or something like that. He's very good golf. I mean, he plays every day the sun's out, he's playing. So, I mean, he probably plays 100 rounds in the summer. And then, you know, you ask, okay, well, what do you do the other, you know, 7 months that are cold and the course that are closed? Well, he'll say, I go on 10 or 15 golf trips.
Right.
Yeah.
I played with him last summer at Spring Hill one day, and he's a good player.
Yeah.
What? So you were on the ice, you said, for 9 hours today, part of this Hockey Ministries camp?
Yeah. It's called Hockey Ministries International, HMI. It's a faith-based organization that they run 10 camps maybe a summer, you know, just kind of bounce around the U.S. and Canada a little bit, in Europe a little bit, I think. But with COVID, I don't know if they're still going to Canada and Europe. But when it's going, they're kind of bouncing everywhere. And this last week it was in Oklahoma City. This week's in Blaine. And there was like, I don't know, 200 kids there between mites, squirts, and peewees, I would say, that range.
How'd you get involved with them?
I've been doing it for probably 10 years now. I think just meeting Bill Butters. I think he ran our chapels with the Wild, and just kind of getting introduced to him. He was the pastor of my sister married Kevin, so my brother-in-law. He officiated their wedding, and just kind of got close with our family, and you know, kind of explained to us, you know, what HMI is and what it's all about. It's just a faith-centered hockey camps, and you know, he does, you know, chapels with, you know, local colleges. He'll go to Mankato, St. Cloud, Duluth, North Dakota, Minnesota, just, you know, sharing the good word.
So you're on the ice, is it all weekend or all week?
It is all week. It's Sunday to Friday. And today I was out there from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. So, you know, my feet are killing me right now.
Any of your girls a part of it?
My older two are kind of begging for me to go. I mean, they probably could have come, but I said, let's just wait another year. They'll, you know, be a little older and get more cousins involved. So, but I have four nephews in it, kind of Maple Grove and Blaine area they live. And and then I'm going back on Wednesday, and they kind of have a guest speaker every night to, you know, kind of lead their chapel sessions. And so I'm going back Wednesday.
As we record this episode of the show, it's game 3 in the finals. What are your thoughts so far on the dominance of the Avalanche here in the first two games?
Oh my gosh! I mean, I knew the Avs were good. I'm very surprised at just how good they've looked so far in these first two games. But hey, the series isn't over. The same thing happened last series with the Rangers and Tampa Bay. Rangers went up 2-0, and then, you know, Tampa Bay won 4 straight. They have the experience and the team that, hey, they win the next two at home, which very possible. It's a brand new series, so I wouldn't count them out by any means. You know, they're back-to-back champs for a reason, and just there's something about having that experience. I mean, you even saw with St. Louis, you know, playing the Wild in the first round, the team that kind of just knows how to get going at the right time, and the guys that, you know, step up at the right time are always their big name guys. They know what kind of sacrifice it takes to advance in the playoffs, and you know, Tampa's definitely has that. And you know, there's a reason why all these GMs want to sign a winner. You know, whoever wins the Stanley Cup, the entire team's getting pay raises and extensions all over the place, and they basically have a job for the rest of their career because everyone wants a winner. They want the guy that, like I said, knows what it takes, you know, come playoff time.
11 series in a row they've won. Which is amazing when you think about that. 11 series. When you think about how tough it is to win a playoff series.
Goodness, I did not know that.
I mean, they've won the two in a row and now three series this year. I mean, it's just amazing when you think about what that means. And we were talking, Michael Russo and I were talking on a, I think it was maybe last week's show, about comparisons to some of these. Now, this was before the finals started and didn't know they would be backs to the wall down 2-0 again.
Yeah.
But you start to look at the Islanders in the 80s, the Oilers shortly thereafter, the Canadians a little early.
And Red Wings.
And one of the points that I made was that this is different because when the Canadians were winning, I think they won 4 in a 5-year span, and there were 18 teams in the league.
Yeah.
When the Islanders won, there were 21 teams in the league, and 16 were making the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, now there's 32 teams, and the salary cap makes the parity level not seen before. I think their run this year might be more impressive than any of those dynasties where it was 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 6.
I mean, you definitely think these guys would start wearing down. I mean, playing until July every summer would take its toll. I mean, the rest of the league is resting, recovering, training, you know, getting ready for next season. These guys are still blocking shots with their shoulders and their chins, you know, and these guys are putting everything on the line all the way until July for the, you know, 3 years running. It's truly amazing. And you're exactly right about the parity. It's NHL definitely, with the salary cap and all that, if the Colorado Avalanche play their C game at home against
Arizona,
and they play their A game, they're going to lose.
Right.
Or Buffalo. It doesn't really matter. I mean, that's how good the NHL is. And there's enough skill on each and every team that can make you pay. And I'm excited to see if Tampa can chip away at this. You know, like I said, it's not undoable to win the next two at home. They'll be buzzing tonight. I'm sure the backs are kind of against the wall game three, and then the series can shift a little bit. Momentum might kind of go in their favor a little bit.
I've been amazed listening to John Cooper throughout this run because he's so poised no matter what the situation. And remember, they had their backs to the wall in the very first round against a very good Toronto team. And Toronto had them down. They had to win the last two games to win that series. And yet there was just never a panic in him. Everything was matter of fact. They went and put a whooping on Florida in the second round. And he just had this demeanor about him that you talk about it from a player's perspective. They got to feed off of that from a coaching staff that just knows what it takes and knows 100%. How to prepare.
100%. I think that, you know, everything kind of starts at the top and trickles down. You know, to have that kind of calm demeanor in your press conferences, because we all hear, you know, what our coaches say or what is tweeted out. You know, it's an era of social media, and if a coach wants to blow up the team and, you know, get angry and fiery and chuck sticks and chuck water bottles, like, you'll hear about that. But seeing his demeanor, even after last game, they got smoked. I saw some quote, I can't even remember what it was, but it was so like,
yeah, we got to be better.
Yeah, exactly. It was just like, and that would put some confidence in the guys. Just like, hey, we've been here before. We're the back-to-back champs. We have two rings all on our fingers. We know what game three is going to be all about. Let's put our backs against the wall for that game and let the chips fall where they lie.
One of his assistants on whom he seems to rely quite a bit is Derek Lalonde. Did you ever cross paths with him when he was in the Wild organization?
Just like training camps and stuff like that. I got introduced to him a few times, had a few conversations. Seemed like a great man.
It's interesting whenever you watch the dynamic on benches too, and there are some that they run hot, and these guys seem to collectively be kind of that calm, cool. One of the players that's really stood out to me in this playoff is Ryan McDonagh, who, you know, Minnesota guy, just I've felt his whole career has been one of the more underrated shutdown defensemen, and the minutes he's logged throughout this playoff against the best in each of those series, I think is amazing.
He's a freak. He's a freak athlete. He trains like an animal. I've seen it firsthand this guy is smart. He thinks the game. He's strong as an ox. They call him Truck or Trucker, you know, just like because Mac, you know, Mac Truck. He's literally, like, that's his base. Is, you know, he's got some big old quads, big butt. I mean, this guy's, he's built for the playoffs. And I think there was, I think he's made playoffs every year of his career.
Yes, I think that's right.
And how amazing is that? Like, again, like, going back to, you know, making these runs each and every year, like, that takes a toll on teams and on certain guys. And for him, it's like his body of work. He knows what it takes each and every summer that he gets back, you know, how much time to take off, how much rest and recovery he needs, what kind of training he does, you know, how hard he skates in the summers. You know, I definitely tip my cap to McDonough. He's going back to when I was in college, I played against him. He was at Wisconsin when I was at CC, and he, you know, he's kind of highly touted. He was first rounder, second rounder, something like that.
I think he was a late first round guy.
Something like that. And honestly, like, I'm like, man, he's good, but I'm not that impressed with him. Like, everyone's saying he's going to be an NHL, you know, all star, whatever. I'm like, you know what? That's going. But holy crap, was I wrong? Like, this guy, he's a gamer.
On the other side of the series, Colorado has—it's been amazing their dominance. 14-2 in this year's playoffs, going into Game 3 of the final, and this is a team Wild see a lot. Wild fans know these guys. They've been banging heads with these guys for a few years, yeah. And right now, if you're a Wild fan and you're watching just the dominant level that this team is capable of reaching,
yeah.
It's a little frightening.
It is because, I mean, they're not old. It's still a very young team. It's a team that we're gonna have to deal with each and every year. You know, how many times do we play them in the regular season?
Either four or five.
Okay, four or five. It's definitely scary. These, especially the level they're playing at, and seeing, you know, Darcy Kemper kind of take off with his game is exciting for me to see. Just, you know, he had a lot of years here where. He's just trying to find his way. I was, you know, as a backup, and it sounds like, or it feels like he's kind of is able to take the reins as the number one, especially, you know, coming from Arizona. That's kind of where it started, where he, you know, maybe found that confidence and that swagger. And, you know, he's been a rock star this run.
As a defenseman, when you watch Cale Makar, it's hard to really make a comparison from him to anybody else in the league because his skill set is different than any other defenseman. To me, I keep looking at him, and he looks like the defensive equivalent of Connor McDavid.
Yeah. I mean,
his skating is unreal.
He has a vision. He has a shot. Like what he thinks as the last man back to make, you know, spinorama moves or put a, you know, a crazy dangle on, like, this guy thinks the game different than obviously I ever did. So it truly amazes me to watch him and just see his action. I mean, all over the ice. He's solid defensively. He doesn't get burnt a lot. He doesn't make careless passes. He plays the game the right way. But then on the offensive end, you might as well say he's the fourth forward. And he's, you know,
which isn't it amazing how
hybrid.
Much that has become the norm is a strange word, but almost a necessity for teams right now. And this is happening in the last 3, 4, 5 years, even I'd say, where it's the game is changing to the point where you have to have defensemen who can be a part of your offensive attack
for sure,
or else it's going to be difficult to score
for sure. It's, yeah, that's the way the game has been going, and you know, it amazes me to see guys like McDonough, you know, kind of shift his game. I think he, you know, almost had 30 points this year. I mean, you have to be able to, you know, change your game to the era that it's in, and he's done so well at that. But you see, in every rush, there's always a defenseman trying to join the play. It's never like, okay, we're just going to get the puck in the skilled guy's hands and let them go. We'll just kind of hang back and maybe see if there's a mistake or turnover, and then we're going to, you know, play defense. No, it's to score goals in the NHL with all the speed and skill, I mean, it's definitely, oh, Colorado scored. Definitely gone. gone that route.
And Dean Evason made a bunch of points this year. He'd always say, look, you work so hard to get in the zone and to get down in the zone.
Yeah.
Why leave? Just because you're a defenseman. Why leave?
Yeah.
Just stay down there.
Yeah.
And I mean, when
has that ever been like the train of thought for coaching?
Right.
Yeah.
Just slightly different than Mike Yeo's approach, you think?
Yeah, for sure.
As you watch that.
No, I had a leash. Like when I got like over, guys would laugh. Like I got over the offensive blue line, I got like a hard tug back. You know, like, I don't belong in there. But it's definitely the game where you try holding pucks in as long as you can and use your skating ability if you need to get back. And, you know, the Wild have such good skaters on defense with Spurge and Broads and Dumba and where they can hold pucks in, and if they happen to get it chipped by them, they have the wheels to get back and you know, get back in good defensive positioning.
How closely did you follow the team this year?
I would say I watched pretty close to half the games. I came down to a couple, 2-3 games. It's super weird to get down there, and especially for warm-ups. I brought my girls down, and they're super excited. They wanted to, you know, get down there for warm-ups and just kind of have that feeling again. And because that was their favorite part of, you know, me playing, was, you know, getting down on the glass and, you know, having me, you know, bang my stick next to their faces. And it definitely brought back a lot of memories that, you know, I almost, you know, started tearing up just, you know, being down there and, you know, seeing them warm up and kind of dance around with their music. And, you know, that feel that, you know, made me really miss it.
The atmosphere in the building this year was unlike anything I had ever seen.
Yeah.
Did you feel that when you were down there?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It was a really, really good buzz. I think, the success they had in the regular season and the excitement, and just like what we're talking about with you know, scoring, you know, all on the rise and defensemen joining the play, this year was different than any years that I was there. You know, all of our years were, you know, like you said, Mike Yeo, or, you know, even Bruce Boudreau, and you know, we wanted to win games 3-1, and we were totally acceptable of doing that, and we all bought into that. Now it's like the Wild score goals on, weren't they top 5 in goals?
Yeah,
four?
All year long.
I mean, that creates that buzz maybe for more fan interactment and interaction. And you definitely felt it.
So I stopped by Kowalski's because we needed to have a few more steaks, and they're offering 40-day aged prime New York strips and boneless ribeyes right now, and they are incredible. We had a couple of the boneless ribeyes last night, and it's the dry age is they hold the meat at a perfect temperature for that long, and normally I think this is a little bit longer. I should have asked the guy last night exactly how many days longer it is than normal, but it is unreal how good this ribeye was that I had last night. One of the better ones that I've had from Kowalski's, and they never disappoint, and those guys will point you in the right direction, but they've just changed. We also had, we've had some seafood from there recently, and they've changed where they get it. They really study it, taste it, and in fact, they've gone to a different scallop lately that is that's the way it's raised is different, and the scallop has tremendous flavor. It's been awesome. So I always love trying out the new things, trying out what they recommend. And if you're going to have great food, great meals, great guests, whatever, you got to start with the best ingredients. And for that, go to Kowalski's.
Hey, hockey fans, Jerry Bosch here again from Bosch Law Firm and WorkCompExperts.com. If you're injured at work, it's never too soon to contact the lawyers and awesome staff at Bosch Law Firm. We'll answer all your questions, help you set up your work comp claim, and help you select professionals who will be there to help you, not the insurance company. And with almost 30 years of litigation experience, if your benefits are denied, we'll fight to get you paid. Bosch Law Firm. The call's always free and there's never a fee unless we obtain benefits on your behalf. Call or text us at 651-333-8300 or visit us at workcompexperts.com.
If you're thinking about selling your home, now is the time. Now you can get a strong cash offer, sell your home stress-free with a guaranteed offer with Chris Lindahl Real Estate. Don't worry about the hassle of constant cleaning and home maintenance. Sell your home with Chris Lindahl today. Go to chrislindahl.com, fill out a quick form, receive an all-cash offer on your home today. No obligation, and the guaranteed offer allows you to bypass the market and sell your home hassle-free. That means no showings, no open houses, no stress. Just choose when you want to move, and you'll close with confidence. The Wall Street Journal named Chris Lindahl Real Estate the number one real estate team in Minnesota and Wisconsin for closed transactions. One of their clients, Dino, said, quote, "We got a guaranteed offer from Chris Lindahl Real Estate in 24 hours above market value, and we got to stay until we found our next home. It was smooth, easy, and stress-free. I cannot recommend Chris Lindahl Real Estate enough." Thanks, Dino. Wonder if it was Dino Cicerelli, Anthony. The Chris Lindahl Real Estate guaranteed offer keeps you in control. It's that simple. Go to chrislindahl.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today so you can start packing. Certain restrictions apply.
We talked so many times throughout the course of the season about just a different feel and in the building, but also with the team. When you, as a former player, when you watch the way things went for them, the number of times they were scoring with extra attackers at the end of games, the number of games they're finding way to win in overtime.
Crazy. And
we just kept saying there's just something special. It's hard to put a finger on. Is that something that you could sense when you watch a team play?
It must have been a good, tight-knit group. And, I've talked to Spurge about it. I've talked to, Foligno about it. And they were. And you could see that. You could see the togetherness as far as when the game got on the line. It almost, especially at home in the XL, like, you just kind of had that feeling like they're going to pull this out. You know, even down one or down two and the goalie's pulled, you still had the feeling like these guys are going to score to tie it up and this is going to overtime. Like, that. And to have that sense and that feel in the locker room, which I'm sure they had, that's special. Like you said, it was a special year. I mean, it was a good regular season. It just we got kind of a tough draw in the in the playoffs. I don't like the NHL playoff format. I think it should go back to 1-8, 2-7, 3-6, but. That's an issue for another day, I'm sure.
plenty of time for discussion of that. How awkward is it when you step away from the game to stay in contact with your former teammates, but now you're as an ex-player, not a player?
Yeah, I mean it's different because you definitely want to give them the space, because when you're in it, you're, like I said earlier, you're in it, you're breathing it, you're eating it, you're sleeping it, you're really focus, and you should be. It's your career. It's everything you dreamed of. It's everything you're putting all your eggs in that basket, and so it's hard to. Oh, they got disallowed. It's hard to really stay involved with those guys that are in it still. But as far as guys that are done, I've been able to kind of keep in touch with those guys and texting with old teammates and buddies like that, and especially with the podcast that I got started.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that. Now you're officially a media member.
Yeah.
Press box.
Someone needed
here
to take some more airwaves away from you guys. So, me and my brother started something called the Press Box, and
The Press Box came to be when you were
scratched,
and you'd come up and you'd sit in the booth next to us, and the Press Box
popcorn
got its name, right?
Yeah,
but so the podcast itself, how'd it come to be?
My initial idea was the Wild have struggled with like an alumni program. There isn't one. So a year or two ago, I started thinking about it on like, okay, what's Pierre Marc Bouchard doing? What's Nick Schultz doing? What's Greg Zannon doing? What's Matt Cook doing? What's Devin Dumick doing? Let's reach out to all these guys that I played with, and I'm buddies with, and that I want to know what the transition from hockey was like, because from any sport that you leave from, you're at the top of your level. You reached your dream, and you leave, and some guys weren't fortunate enough to make, $50 million where they can just kind of get golf memberships and play tennis and hang with their kids all day, every day. A lot of people have to, get into the working world, and that's tough. And I just want to know, okay, what's Justin Falk doing? You know, our buddy Falker and Matt Cassian, and you know, just hearing what their transition story was like, because it's hard for a lot of guys leaving the game and you know, starting their second chapter of life.
Well, and sometimes it's not even money related; it's just identity related. Yeah, yeah, your whole life has been this. It's been this, and now all of a sudden, there's a little anonymity to it. There's no competition in most cases. Yep. There's a lot of things that you lose when you step away from the game.
And you're definitely right. It's definitely an identity. Like I said, selfishly, it's all about you. So you worked 35 years of your life to get to that level, and all of a sudden it's over. And now, okay, what's my identity? Am I a dad? Am I, you know, where am I in life? And it's hard to figure out just what you want to do next. That's why a lot of guys get into coaching or stay involved in hockey with, you know, player personnel or get in management, and kind of, you know, keeps those competitive juices going somewhat, even though it's not the same. But so everyone has different paths. That's why I started the Press Box. And yeah, give us a follow on Instagram at Press Box or at Nate Presser 39.
So who have you had so far?
We've done two that have gone live. So we did Devin Dubnyk and Ryan Carter, and then we've recorded a few others.
I happen to know what Ryan Carter's doing.
I know. Yeah, everyone knows what he's doing. But no, we did like Matt Cassian and Nick Seeler. He's still playing. So I still want to do guys that are still involved playing. Like, I'd love to hear Jason Zucker and Charlie Coyle and Nino Niederreiter and Eric Halla, guys that were here that, you know, got soaked into to the Minnesota scene, maybe still live here in this off seasons. Let's hear what they do, what going to different organizations was like. Do they miss being here? Do they have plans of ever coming back after their careers are over? Because a lot of guys do. I mean, there's, you know, Matt Cook and Devin Dubnyk were two guys that we've recorded and done. They both live here in Minnesota. Okay, well, why? Let's talk to them about that. You know, how'd you guys choose to stick around here? And, you know, our weather isn't the best. It's either minus 20 in January or 100
right? Humid.
Yeah.
Matt Cook was coaching for a while. Is he still involved?
Yep, he's still coaching. He's coaching Chaska, and he's like the lead on-ice instructor for TPH, Total Package Hockey. So, again, like, you know, keep those competitive juices going some way or another. He, you know, found an avenue to, you know, keep his nose in hockey. And I'm sure, he said, like, he practices with these guys on certain days and gets his equipment on. And I'm sure he hacks and whacks with those guys.
When you were talking earlier about Ryan McDonough, part of the connection that all these guys that play here have come through here, so many of them choose to stay here.
Yeah.
For just, it is a, the weather's lousy in the wintertime, but they're all playing hockey in the wintertime anyway.
Exactly.
So in the summertime, everybody seems to like it here. And
it's a hockey hotbed.
And then you guys all would work out together. So there's you develop a little connection and camaraderie with guys even that have never been your teammates.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, if you want to skate, you'll find a skate in Minnesota. Whether you're on the east side, north side, west side, you know, whatever. Like, you're going to find a skate. If you want a workout group that does band work, you're going to find that somewhere. If you want a different types of style workout that fits your goals and needs, you're going to find it. Like, it truly is the state of hockey, and that's why guys, you know, Zach Bogosian, you know, comes back in here and lives here. James Van Riemsdyk, Jake Gardner. I mean, the list is so big. You go to one Dubuque League game and you see, like, oh, I didn't know. Why would he come here? But there's such a good community here for training. And, you know, our summers are great. It's 100 today, but, you know, for the most part, our weather is great. There's lakes, there's, you know, a lot of guys will live on the lake, and you see why these guys want to come back.
What's that like when you work out with those guys during the summer? Guys that are a lot of them are your rivals.
Yeah. It's hockey's a kind of a small community, and you get to know guys whether you train with them or see them or not. You hear rumors about certain guys and stories about certain guys, but I like. My Dubuque League team had, you know, Brock Nelson and Jake Genzel, you know, a bunch of AHL guys. And you get to know these guys on a different level than just, you know, competing with them each and every night, or, you know, a handful of times a year. And but for the most part, hockey guys are all pretty dang similar. You know, we come from kind of the same upbringing. And let's just say there's not one player I ever came across that wasn't a good worker. Every hockey player in pro hockey is such a hard worker, and they had to get there from that. And even, like I was telling all these kids today at HMI, the hardest working guy that I ever played with was Zach Parise. He's probably the richest too. You know, how kind of ironic is that? Like, he's the first guy on the ice doing tip drills. After practice is over, he's doing different skating drills and working on more tips. Like, it takes a certain type of wiring to get there, and we all kind of share that, and you know, that's how we kind of bond, and you know, by training together.
Well, how was the show with Dubnyk?
Good. Yeah, he's you know, he's a talker. He's got a bunch of stories, especially, you know, card game stories, and you know, he's got three boys and just chasing them around. He's, you know, doing the NHL Network stuff. Trying to think what else he's got going.
Because guys, for him, like some guys, you kind of see it coming. Like, you're winding down in your career. With him, it was a little abrupt. I mean, he went into a season, I think, still hoping to get a job, and yeah, all of a sudden there just wasn't anything out there.
And that's a hard way to go out. You know, some guys get injured. Some guys is, you know, no teams want them. Some guys train all summer and all fall and hope to get something. I mean, there, even a few guys that, you know, I talked to on this podcast, that's what happened. And, you know, that'd be a hard way to, you know, kind of be told, like, you got to retire. You know, just no GM wants to sign you. I mean, that's kind of a hard pill to swallow. Just because when you think, like, no, I still have, you know, juice left in the legs, I still feel good. You know, I'm 100% healthy. And, you know, just, yeah, he, I think he wanted to get to the Olympics. So he, you know, signed with Charlotte in the American Hockey League, played some games, and just something freaky happened where it just didn't work out to go to the Olympics. But he definitely had the drive to play again. But I think he's realizing now that it's over, you know, I think. And he's, you know, again, trying to figure out what that transition is like. He's, you know, coaching his sons and, you know, lives here in Minnesota and Edina and just enjoying life.
So how do you like the broadcast? I mean, it's podcasting, but it's still broadcasting, right? I mean, yeah. How do you like it?
Yeah, I like it. I definitely enjoy talking with the people that we've had so far. I love reaching back out to, you know, like I said, Matt Cassian, Justin Falk, Jared Spurgeon, you know, all these guys that, you know, I wrote a list of all the guys that I played with from the Wild, that would be fun to, you know, speak to and have as a guest. And the list was probably over 100 guys. It was probably 150 guys. And just, I want to reach out to, you know, Devin Setoguchi and Torrey Mitchell and Chris Stewart and have these guys on just to kind of shoot the crap again, because I miss them. You know, like I said, it's hard to stay in contact with guys forever. They, you know, Chris Stewart's up in Brainerd. He's got a ton of kids. Torrey Mitchell's out in Vermont, has a ton of kids. Devin Setoguchi's out in California. I mean, we really go our separate ways, and we all have families to deal with, and you can't be on your phone all day. So it's but the idea of, you know, having these guys on and just kind of having a natural conversation like we did in the locker room is something that I've been enjoying.
Now that you've been away a couple of years, when you look back, what's the single biggest highlight of your playing days?
I mean, the first game kind of always comes back to my mind. I'm playing up in Edmonton, my first game. Just because I never thought I was going to get to the NHL. I was always told I wasn't. I was always kind of told to have other options ready to go, you know, get your degree because you're going to need it to fall back on, you know. And just remembering that game as like something like, I can't believe I'm here. I had to pinch myself. It's almost like an out-of-body experience when I was playing in that game. Like, it's hard to remember certain details, but I remember, you know, throwing the jersey on and looking around the locker room and just being like, this is really surreal. And, you know, that game definitely sticks out. But I told a lot of guys, you know, watching playoffs, like, I love watching the NHL playoffs. It just kind of just gets my juices flowing, as you know, seeing the competitive nature of all these guys, you know, putting their bodies on the line. So, you know, I was fortunate enough to play in 25 NHL playoff games, and honestly, every one I was like a dream.
Do you want to wash dishes, take a shower, and do laundry all at the same time? Get unlimited hot water with a tankless water heater. My friends over at Aquarius Home Services are offering $750 off a new tankless water heater. That's right, $750 off. Why tankless? Endless hot water, cleaner hot water, less likely to leak, more energy efficient, and saves space. Where to start? Contact my friends over at Aquarius Home Services and receive a new plumbing equipment estimate for free. Aquarius believes in the earning the right to be recommended. They're just a click away at AquariusHomeServices.com. And don't forget to mention Russo sent you.
Take the checking account challenge from Royal Credit Union. Compare your checking account to Royal and see why it makes sense to switch. Royal's checking accounts have no hidden fees and lots of free features that make it easy to stay on top of your money. You can deposit checks with Royal's mobile app, receive real-time notifications when transactions happen, and even freeze your debit card in seconds. See what other features you're missing out on and make the switch to a Royal checking account at rcu.org/royalchallenge. Insured by NCUA.
For all the times, and we've talked over the years about your career and your path and the number of times that you were told you weren't good enough or that you were unlikely to make it. Was there any one guy that stood out that, like, you take a little pride in proving him wrong?
That's a good question. I've never been asked that before. I don't think there's one specific one, but it was like ongoing through my youth and through high school and even in college, you know, like, my college coach, you know, didn't think I was ever going to make it, you know, like to be told that at, you know, at age 22 or something, where, you know, I'm still on my trajectory up. I haven't reached my peak yet, that, you know, there was never a moment where I'm like, geez, I would really want to prove this guy wrong.
Yeah.
It was always just like, I loved what I was doing. I loved playing hockey. I loved putting the equipment on, and I brought that love each and every day to whether I was playing in the game or not, whether I was in the press box or not. It was a journey, and I'm, you know, I'm really, really, you know, I played 11 years pro hockey. I honestly thought I was going to play 1 or 2 years, and I just found kind of a role in a niche. And I knew that if I was going to play behind Ryan Suter and Jared Spurgeon and Jonas Brodin and Matt Dumba, I was going to be, you know, third set, maybe seventh defenseman. When I get in the lineup, I'm going to play 10 or 12 minutes. I'm going to make them the best 10 or 12 minutes I could make them. And that was honestly just my whole mindset for years. And if I'm going to be the number seven defenseman, I'm going to be the best number seven defenseman in the league. That's, you know, kind of the confidence I needed to have, you know, to go into the rank each and every day.
How about the OT winner on hockey day?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely up there. That was that's something I'll, you know, definitely talk to my grandkids about. It was a special day. I remember driving through Elk River the day before and seeing the setup, and it was you know, not some, you know, like an idiot, but it was dreamy. It was super cool.
That was such a, the pit where they played it was,
yeah,
it wasn't made up. I mean, that was such a big part of hockey for all those guys who grew up in Elk River.
It was kind of the hotbed for a lot of years, where those were all the pickup games, and Elk River was very hockey centered community that if you wanted a game, you go down to the pit, you're going to find one. There was, and that's where you pick up your skills and your work ethic. You know, I chased my brother was 3 years older than me. I had to chase him around, and, you know, all of his friends, they're bigger and stronger and faster. So I had to do what I could to keep up. And I'm sure that's was a huge, key in my development throughout my younger years.
The way you define your attitude about your role within a team and just embracing it and making the best of it, no matter how many minutes, no matter how many games, whatever. Was there anybody that had an impact on you throughout your career that instilled that in you?
I was able to play with a lot of good guys, so many good guys. And not to sound cheesy, but I felt like I was kind of a glue guy. I liked being the guy that brought the locker room together, whether you're a first liner or a fourth liner, whether you're a $8 million guy or a league minimum guy, whether you're, you know, a PK or a power play guy. I liked being the guy that, you know, just, you know, built the camaraderie.
Could relate to both.
Yeah, exactly. And for a lot of years, I was one of the older guys, but I loved, you know, hanging with the younger guys and, you know, playing cards with them on the road and, but, you know, trying to, you know, put everyone together. And, I definitely think, you know, my dad had a huge, huge advice for me throughout all those years. Just, you know, he always told me to, you know, to walk in the locker room with my shoulder blades together and my chest up, like walk in the locker room with confidence, even though, okay, you might have been out for 3 weeks, you know, have the attitude that, hey, they're making the mistake and they're missing out not playing you. And, you know, it might sound cocky, but it was something where I needed to have that kind of confidence in myself. So when my number was called, okay, I'm ready to go. Like, I feel good. I've been watching the games from upstairs in the press box. I'm ready to go. And it's definitely my dad, I would say. But there were so many, like, good defensemen, especially, you know, throughout my years. I mean, just the guys I came up with, you know, Jared Spurgeon, Marco Scandella, Justin Falk, Max Norrell, Drew Bagnall, like, my early years, you know, hanging with those guys, they're all such, like, kind, humble guys that were perfect for me to, you know, break into the pro hockey with. And we had a special run with those guys. That was probably my favorite season of my career.
What do you miss the most?
I miss going on the road. I miss, our private planing to Denver and, you know, playing cards on the flight and just sharing laughs with guys and, you know, like I said, chuck cards around and, you know, get to the Ritz and take a nap and then go to a nice steakhouse dinner with the guys. I mean, it was all about the camaraderie, and that's what I miss the most, is just, you know, having that locker room feel. That's why that's where the podcast kind of started from, is I would just love to have that feel again. And but, you know, definitely miss the competitive nature of it too. I mean, I haven't competed in a year, and you know, you definitely start to miss that, the game nights, you know, heading down to the XL at 4 o'clock and knowing that you're playing against Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, and, you know, get those juices flowing, cranking the music, getting Dumba's playlist going on in the locker room, and, you know, getting the guys going.
Would you crack
a Red Bull?
Yeah. Would you? I know we had talked before, and you were toying with the idea of pursuing some coaching. Is that still something you're considering? Is that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know to what level. I see the time commitment that it is with pro hockey and the American Hockey League and the NHL, and whatever I'm going to do next, I want to, you know, my family's starting to plant roots here, and that's why, the main reason why I wanted to hang up my skates in the first place is to, you know, be here in Minnesota and not move anymore. So if there's an opportunity that arises, you know, it's something that I would definitely look into. But again, it's not about me anymore. It's about my kids and my wife, and they're happy with where we're at right now. So if it's, you know, a coaching opportunity here around the Twin Cities, hey, you know, it's something I'll definitely think about. But you know, moving away and being gone and going on the road again. You know, I just did that for the past decade. It would be hard for me to, you know, do that again. My Brit wouldn't allow that again, you know.
I was talking to Miko about it a little bit, and he said he learned that quickly when he was helping with the Finnish team in the World Juniors.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I felt like getting on the ice and all of that was great, and interacting with the players was great. He said, I had no idea how many hours were spent with video breakdowns and planning practices and all of that. And that's for a short run tournament, not for a full season.
Imagine doing that for 82 games and for
How hard those guys work. I mean,
there's no off season.
There isn't. And there's no off night.
No. I mean, they're there hours before we get there, and they're there hours after we leave. I mean, they're prepping the video. I mean, it's just that era where video is so important, or they think it's so important that, you know, the better prepared team will have more success, and that's their mindset.
Who's the next guest on the Prost Box?
I think Jared Spurgeon.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, he's a guy that I kind of broke in with.
Do you ever think of him when you played with him early and think that this guy could be a captain?
Cannot believe it. One of the stories I was going to talk about on the Prost Box, I don't know if I should, but
sure you should.
Yeah. No, he's kind of the first guy I saw when we went to Traverse City together. And, you know, me thinking, like, coming from college and hearing all these stories about pro hockey, I'm thinking all these defensemen are going to be monsters. I'm going to have to fight a lot. I'm a lot of things ran through my head as far as how beefy you guys are going to be. And the first guy I meet is Jared Spurgeon. I'm like, holy crap. I mean, this has got to be a little skilled forward or something like that, or someone's brother. I'm not exactly sure. But, you know, it just goes to show, like, he broke into the NHL in an era where it was mainly big defensemen. It goes to show how good he is.
Well, it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to checking some of these out. Thank you for coming and joining us tonight. It's always interesting to chat with you. We've had some great chats over the years.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah.
We want to thank our sponsors here on Worst Seats in the House: Royal Credit Union, Kowalski's, Profile by Sanford, Aquarius, Chris Lindahl, and Bosch Law Firm, and of course, Tuttles and Grain Belt, who've re-upped and are back with us for another year. We're excited about that. And thanks for listening to this week's show. Always great to have Nate with us. Michael Russo will be back with us for next week's show, and we'll have our July dates for in-person podcasts soon. That's been this week's edition of Worst Seats in the House. So much coming out, there's nothing going in. I know that you feel like you're never gonna win. Oh, but the world